I have a lot of random things that I'm just going to dump in front of you and have you, you can sort them out later. But there is a thread that ties them all together. In Ephesians 5, it says, "Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." So, the Bible says that husbands are to love their wives, and it says that wives are to respect their husbands, be submissive to their husbands, respect their husbands. In one of the things that we have to get on the table, the first thing we have to get on the table, is that I am really fairly certain that half of the people in this room have no idea what's going on in the other half of the room. And vice versa, right? This is a same planet, different worlds kind of situation. God has made, this is a divine sense of humor, thing, where what if you if you're hanging out with a group and you say, "Oh, we're all friends, and I'm confident that we're all interacting at an asexual bipedal carbon unit level." If you know what I'm talking, "Oh, we're just friends. We're just friends." That information is false, right? That's not true. It doesn't work that way. God has made men a certain way, and we all speak English, so there's an optical illusion that's created where you think that when you're talking to the other person, the same sort of thing is going on in their head as is going on in your head when you say these things. So there are all sorts of opportunities for monstrous misunderstandings, which people don't vocalize for years because they're afraid of looking stupid or blowing up a friendship or blowing up a potential relationship or whatever. So I'm going to begin with certain principles, and I'm going to talk about how to navigate your way from these principles to an intelligent approach to courtship, pairing off, finding someone, etc., and without leaving a wake of damaged individuals in behind you. That's not good. So, in the text I read, men, we'll begin with this: men and women are different, and they don't understand the depth of the differences at all. Okay? They're very different, and they don't understand the depth of the differences at all. God has intended these differences to be complementary. They're supposed to harmonize, but because sin entered the world, they don't harmonize, right? They don't readily harmonize. Think of it this way. There are men sing one note, women sing another note, and they're completely different notes. One's a C, one's a G, but they're part of the same chord. If you're hitting your pitch, then, and the other person's hitting their pitch, it harmonizes. If you're going along singing sharp and she's going along singing flat or vice versa, there's nothing worse. Okay, nothing worse. You've been at church, have you not, when someone three rows back launched into singing a harmony that wasn't really? They thought they knew it, and they didn't know it. And it's easy to sing unison, right? So everybody, if we sing in unison, everybody sings the same note, everybody goes along. It's safe, it's secure, not risky, but it's relatively boring. When someone sings harmony and they're hitting their notes, it's beautiful, it's wonderful. If someone tries to sing harmony and they're missing, and then the people all singing melody are missing, it's really, really bad. In a bad marriage, what happens is either a husband is requiring his wife to sing unison with him, or the wife is requiring the husband to sing unison with her. We're going to operate the same way, and it just is dull, right? Sometimes these bad marriages are not horrendous. They don't wind up in the counselor's office, but they're dull, right? God wants men and women together doing distinctively masculine and distinctively feminine things, and he wants you to hit your pitch. He wants you to be hitting your note. The difficulty is, and this is the situation that you're in, is that you have grown up, most of you, in Christian homes where the pitch was established by your folks. Or your family had a certain pitch, and you are out on your own at university or at New St. Andrews, and you are figuring out what my voice, what my pitch, how should I be? What does the Bible require of a godly man? What does the Bible require of a godly woman? And then on top of that, what do our cultural expectations require of a masculine man? What do our cultural expectations require of a feminine woman? And so on. All of that is involved in hitting your pitch, and you're learning how to do it. Now, one of the problems is that when someone is first learning anything, taking lessons, driving lessons, guitar lessons, golf lessons, there will be all sorts of times when the instructor will say, no, don't hold the club that way. No, don't do it that way. No, you don't shift that way. No, don't do that with the clutch. No, don't, you know, no. That's what lessons are for the first year or so. No, no, not that. No, especially not that. and you are in being an independent guy lesson right now. And you're living in being an independent woman lesson right now. And you're what do I do? How do I respond? Do I laugh at that? Do I respond to it? Do I take the initiative to invite people to a party? What do I do? What do I do? And then if someone is trying to be masculine, there will be times when they miss, and it can be kind of funny, right? And it's also funny the other way, right? If someone's trying to be feminine and they're not, but we should be sympathetic with one another, because this is something we're called to do. You're called to learn how to sing, so that Ephesians 5:24, therefore as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands. The Bible does not teach that women should submit to men. The Bible does not teach women across the board submitting to men across the board. It teaches wives be to their own husbands. When a daughter is submissive to her father, and when a wife is submissive to her husband, what that does is protects her from having to submit to all the other men in the world, right? It's be submissive to your own husband. And husbands are to be devoted to one woman. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Okay, that's the setup. Men and women run on different kinds of fuel. They run, it's like diesel and regular, okay? They run on different kinds of fuel. And you can see this from this passage in Ephesians 5. Men run on respect, women run on love. Men run on respect, that's what runs their car. Women run on love. Now, I'm not saying that men don't need to be loved or that women don't need to be respected. I'm talking about emphasis. Okay? I'm talking about emphasis. When Paul turns to the husbands and wives of Ephesus and he says, "Now husbands, remember to do this." He tells them to love. Now, when the Bible tells shepherds to feed the sheep, you can infer from that that shepherds need to be told from time to time to feed the sheep, and you can also infer that sheep need food. Okay? Shepherds need to be reminded, and sheep need food. Husbands, love your wives. Well, you can infer from that husbands need to be told to do it. Right? Need to be reminded. I remember 8 years ago talking to a relatively newly married man, and he stopped by in the bookstore where I was, and he'd bought some flowers for his wife, and they were sitting on the table there before he went home. And he was staring at the flowers, and he said, "You know, I don't have any idea why they like these things." I I'm just doing what I'm told. A marriage counselor, somebody told me to do this. I'm just punching the clock here. Well, never mind. So he needs to be instructed. He needs to be told, love your wife. Do thoughtful things. Thoughtful things? What are you talking about? And then, on the other hand, so men need to be taught to love their wives, but you can also infer from this that wives need to be loved. Husbands are being reminded to love their wives because they need to be reminded, and the wives need to be loved. You can also, and that's diesel, right? The women are told to respect and honor their husbands. That's regular. So what, you've probably seen this scenario, maybe in your family, maybe with a girlfriend from high school, maybe, you know, let's say someone of your acquaintance is teamed up with some guy, dirtbag, who treats her like dirt, okay? She's been in this relationship with him for a year and a half, and he just kicks her in the head every chance he gets. And finally, she breaks up with him, and all her friends and family are rejoicing. Yay! They're having parties, they're exchanging gifts. Finally. And then 6 weeks go by, and then she's back with him. And everybody goes, why? And then somebody goes to her and says, why are you back with him? He treats you like dirt. He kicks you in the head. What's the answer? I love him. Now, do you respect him? She would say, eyes would get wide. Are you kidding? Him? He's a jerk. I'll cook meals for him. I'll bear his children. I'll marry him. I will follow him to the ends of the world. But he's a dope. he's the worst. He's the worst. Now, does she respect him? No, not even a little bit. Right? This is because women are capable of loving someone they don't think anything of at all. They don't have a high opinion of at all. But the Bible doesn't tell you to love your husband. There's not one place in the New Testament where wives are told to love their husbands. It's okay, right? It's not a sin. There's one place in Titus where it says the older women are to teach the younger women to be husband lovers, but it's a compound word in Greek, and the word is phileo, the word for love, and it's, I would render it as to be into husbands and into kids, to be domestic. But the verb here where the husbands are taken aside and told to love, well, women are taken aside and told to respect. And that's because men are told to love because they're generally speaking not very good at it, and generally speaking, the woman they're with needs it. Women are told to respect because generally speaking, they're not very good at it, and the man they're with needs it, right? Because that's the kind of fuel he runs on. So this means that when you're thinking about possible possible future husband or wife, one of the things you should be thinking of is, do I respect him? Do I like him, not do I love him, but do I respect him? That's threshold number one. If you don't respect him, if you don't respect his love for God, if you don't respect his work ethic, if you don't respect his knowledge of the word, if you don't respect him, run. Just run. Save me a lot of counseling hours in the future. Keep my schedule clear. Flipped around, men, if you are, you want to find a woman who understands what the Bible teaches about this and understands that she has a responsibility to respect you just as you have a responsibility to love her. You can see this natural tendency in men and women, in boys and girls. If a little boy, let's say a five-year-old boy, 5-6-year-old boy, and a 5 or 6-year-old girl, let's say that things are rough at home, and the kids are not getting the attention they need or desire or whatever, and so the kids are sort of running on fumes, if you know what I mean by that, what starts to happen? Well, little boys brag, and little girls flirt. Little boys brag, little girls flirt. And And the boy gets on the high dive in the summer at the pool, and he invites everybody for the three surrounding counties to look at me. Look at me. Why? Because he wants somebody to tell him he's so brave, so strong, so courageous, such a good diver, such a good diver, right? I've never seen better, right? Thanks, Mom. And then up again. What he's doing is he's wanting people to look at him because he's angling for what? He's angling for respect. He wants respect. He wants to be tough. He wants to be, you know, and this is, remember what I said, that you don't understand. You know, I remember the pinnacle. This is one of the high points of childhood, one of the high points of boyhood. Not the top thing, but it was right up there. When you could come in from the playground at school after recess with blood on you. And then the girls say, "That's twisted. That's twisted. That makes it even better." Should I tell you a story? Maybe this will establish my ethos. Maybe it will. Maybe it will wreck it forever, right? So one time I was fooling around in some old deserted buildings that I shouldn't have been playing there, but I was. And I was climbing through a window. It had an old rusty window frame in it. And I sliced my thumb open. You can probably still see the scar. Anyway, I sliced my thumb open on this, and it was a beauty. It was a beauty. And I walked home. I had blood all over my arm. And I remember on the way home finding a comic book on the road, and so I stopped and read it. And then I snuck into the house, washed all the blood off. It probably needed stitches anyway, but I got a Band-Aid and did it myself. I couldn't look it up on YouTube, but I so I wrapped it up. But then after a few days, it kind of dried out, but was still gnarly. And I remember taking the Band-Aid off at school and showing it to the girl on the desk next to me. Popped it open. Now, I didn't think any of this through, but obviously. But there was something I wanted. I wanted to be tough. I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be not afraid of blood. I wanted to be all those. I wanted to be all those things, right? And there, half the world thinks that kind of thinking is demented. But it's not. It's normal. But then you go the other way. You've got similar challenges. Issues of misunderstanding. Now, having set the framework, men and women are looking for different things. Men are instructed to love because they are generally not good at it. Wives need love. Women are instructed to respect because they're generally not good at doing that, and men need it. And little boys and girls will angle for the kind of attention they need. So if a stranger comes over to someone's house, and then the little girl is all over his lap, then that tells you that she's got a blinking fuel gauge on her dashboard, and mom and dad need to be pouring it on because she's starting to look for attention from random individuals who come into her life. And when she's a little girl, she feels like she's being a nuisance, and she kind of knows it, but she's enough of a needy bucket to just persist anyway, and she feels like she's just being a total nuisance. That makes her more insecure, that makes her more needy, and so she does it worse the next time. And then, when she becomes a young woman, and when adolescence hits, all of a sudden, this person who's been starved for masculine attention for 13 years starts getting a bunch of it. What could go wrong? Okay, what could go wrong? She's all of a sudden, guys are coming around voluntarily. And I must be, and then this twisted sort of, I need respect and I need love sort of game starts being played, and everybody winds up creamed. Everybody winds up damaged. So how do you avoid that? When you, several places I could go. Let me do this. Picture a zone here. All the guys are over here. All the girls are over here. And there's a demilitarized zone in the middle. Okay? I'm going to call this the zone of vulnerability. The zone of vulnerability. When you're in the zone of vulnerability in a relationship, when you can't get, if the relationship breaks up and it doesn't work out, somebody gets hurt. All right. And depending on if it's devastated or mildly disappointed isn't hurt. But if there's devastation, hurt, I've got to process this. I need to seek pastoral counsel. I need to do something. Then you were in the zone and then out. Now, God intends for men and women to live inside that zone of vulnerability. It's not the place where you're not supposed to live. It's a place that you're not supposed to live unless you're tied off with a covenant. Okay, when a man and woman divorce, they were inside the zone of vulnerability, and when they divorce, everybody's devastated. That tells you they were inside the zone of vulnerability. And God wants us to live there, but he wants us to be secured and protected as much as is possible in a fallen world. And that means covenants made in a church before witnesses. Get everybody, all your friends together. Did you hear me say that? Yes, I heard you say that. Till death do us part. Yes, I promise. And we mean it. And then to live in a Bible-believing subculture that holds you to those sorts of promises. So it's okay to live inside the zone, right? But it's not okay to wander in and inside and outside of the zone sort of on your own, because that's the way you navigated junior high. You decided to continue in high school and decided to continue in college. You're in and out and in and out. And you've got one heartbreak after another. Now, there are different ways to understand this. There's in the zone of vulnerability, there are some people are very susceptible. They get in the zone easily. Other people do a better job guarding their heart, and they don't get into the zone all that easily. But if you get into the zone without a covenant, without a promise, without some sort of commitment, then you're engaging in risky, emotionally risky behavior. Now, I want to distinguish between a zone. A girl moves to town and joins the church youth group. We'll call her Susie Lord's Choice. We can call her that because she's very attractive, and she's all of a sudden the will of God for about five or six guys. And they're all praying praying fervently. Non-Christians, before non-Christians ask a girl out or propose to a girl, they take a couple of drinks. Christian guys get the will of God. So he asked Susie, let's say she moves to town, and the first Sunday at church, she smiled at one of the guys and said hi. Isn't that the worst? it's terrible when they do that. In fact, if we could sum the whole thing up, don't do that. Just joking. Let's say she smiles and says hi, and this guy is in the zone. Okay? That's not a relationship problem. That's a personal problem. The guy who gets in the zone that way is the kind of guy who falls in love with the models in a Talbot's catalog, right? His mom left it open. Oh, look at her. Oh. And so he's in the zone. That's a personal problem. He needs to grow up. You know, he needs to fix that. But a relationship problem is where you are, this is a courtship culture, so we're not dating, we're just hanging out. And then we find ourselves hanging out more and more, and then we find ourselves gravitating toward each other. And then after 8 months, you've got situations develop where both the guy and the girl are all emotionally tangled up with each other, and neither of them would answer the question the same way if you asked, what's the status of your relationship? Neither one has any idea of what the other person would say, because they haven't talked about it. And they've just sort of drifted into the zone. And that means, and what you have in the, and let's say this is something we have to budget for even within the church, but it's especially the case outside the church. Let's say they are sexually active, they're sexually involved, then they break up. What you have basically is a divorce without the attorney's fees. No, you don't have to pay attorneys, but that's everything. Everything else is there. Okay, everything else is there. All the hurt, all the baggage, all the issues are there. So you want to avoid you want to avoid that, and so you want clarity, right? And clarity means that you shouldn't drift into relationships, because I'll just put it this way: if it's following the path of least resistance is not a good plan, right? Because guys like being with girls they're attracted to, girls like being with guys they're attracted to, and it's easy just to let it ride. It's easy just to drift into a situation, and then all of a sudden, you don't know where you are. You don't know what this deal is. I remember years ago talking to a young man, and he described to me the situation he was in. He said, I have a girlfriend, and as he laid it out for me, it became very apparent to me that if he went home, if he went and sought her out that evening and proposed, she would say yes. That's where she was. But he said, having been at this place, he asked me, his question was, how do you determine the will of God? How do you know? Right? Well, that's a question he should have asked way earlier. Because God has built men to initiate. God has built women to respond. That means that men initiate instinctively. And it means that women respond instinctively. And the men don't need a reason to initiate. The women don't need a reason to respond. It's just built in. If a guy shows attention, he's at all attractive, there's a tendency to want to respond. And if a guy sees a girl who's at all attractive, he wants to initiate, especially if he thinks that other guys might be interested and he wants to get dibbies. Right. Yeah, I know I'm not going to graduate for 3 years, but she's cute and there's a lot of schmoes in this town. So, I got to post up under the basket. And everybody stay away. Well, you can't do that. But there's a tendency that the guy wants to initiate because God has built the man to initiate. God has built the woman to respond. But we do that reflexively. And as Christians, we ought to do it thoughtfully. We ought to do it bringing every thought captive. We should be understanding what we're doing as we're doing it. This means, well, there's a lot of things it means. One of the things that if a guy is praying about a girl and he's thinking about her, so let's say a guy approaches a girl's dad and says, can I get to know your daughter better? Let's say they're doing the courtship thing. The guy needs to be well ahead of where the girl probably is, because the girl has no responsibility at all to have been thinking about him in that way at all. But he, before he initiates, really ought to have thought about it. Because otherwise, he's like a dog chasing a fire truck. He doesn't know what to do if he catches it. it stops and there he is. Bite the tire? What do I do? So there are guys who initiate, but they've not followed through. But if they've thought about these things prayerfully, they know that they're attracted to her, they know her commitment to Christ, they're in the same group. A guy is in a position to navigate groups in such a way, without looking creepy or obvious, he's in a position to get a lot of his questions settled before he says anything, okay? She doesn't have to be in that position. She can be starting from a standing stop on this. And it's his job, if he knows his mind generally, it's his job to win her. And he gets the green light from her dad. He says, this is where I'm going. What he shouldn't do is be the kind of guy that stands around, you want to hang out, sure, and then, I don't know, what do you want to do? If he wants to initiate, he should initiate things. He should decide things. He should go somewhere. He should have plans. And he should have plans. He should have thought out his intentions for her, not with an absolute 100% certainty, but enough that he is not flabbergasted when the interest is returned. All right, one other thing, and then we can bring this in for questions. In 1 Corinthians 11, it says, where to go? In 1 Corinthians 11:8, it says, "For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels," and we won't go into that. "But the man is not made for the woman, but the woman was made for the man, and neither was man created for the woman, but the woman for the man." So Paul here, but remember where I started in Ephesians 5:24, it is not saying here that the women were created for the men, right? It's a woman submits to her own husband. It doesn't say the women are made for the men and deny that with the men for the women. It's the woman is made for the man, not the man for the woman. So you can see this basic orientation when you envision a novel written by a man for a male audience. Okay? Written by a man with a male readership in view. What is the book about? It could be, this could be a Louis L'Amour Western, or it could be classic literature, Homer's Odyssey, okay? It could be, so what's the book about? Well, it's about the war, or the battle, or getting the cattle back, or finding the gold. It's about the mission, okay? It's about the mission. And if a woman enters the novel, and she enters it, and what's her role besides decoration? Right? That's offensive. Well, I don't care. So what's her role? Well, her role is to help get the gold back, or to help win the battle, or to help the woman. God created Adam and put him in the garden, and then he created to tend the garden, and then he created Eve to tend the gardener. So the gardener was made to tend the garden, and the woman was created to tend the gardener. Okay, so the relationship is like this. He's focused on the mission, she's focused on him. Then picture a book written by a woman for a feminine audience. It could be a Harlequin romance, it could be Pride and Prejudice, okay? The relationship is the plot. So first they meet each other, and they like each other kind of, and then they don't like each other, something comes between them, and then it's resolved and they like each other again. And that was wonderful. And the guy is looking at this, and where are the motorcycles? Where? I need motorcycles. And the perennial, what movie shall we watch? Well, this is all the heart of this. the woman's orientation to the man is different than the man's orientation to the woman, right? And necessarily, that's one of the that and that difference is the one of the notes that you have to figure out how to hit. The man has to learn how to sing that note in a godly way, and the woman has to learn how to sing her note in a godly way, but with the right man, with the right woman, because it's not going to work if you get someone who just isn't like that. So, lots more to say, but let's try to let's chase some of the questions you might have.
Okay, so dating, courtship. So we have a lot of people that come to Moscow from places where courtship is a foreign thing or dating is a foreign thing, and they might show up. This is a new phenomenon. And sometimes dad's in the picture, sometimes not. Can you talk a little bit about just trying to learn some of the even Moscow unique, Christchurch unique cultural cues when it comes to that?
One of the first things to realize is I think it's fair to say that the courtship culture, by and large, has taken root here. So it's a set of cultural expectations. It is not a set of rules. We don't have church rules on courtship. It's more like a set of cultural expectations. That's the first thing. And if someone says, "What's the rule book say about how close you can sit to her on the third visit?" then you're doing it wrong. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, there's different ways. I define not biblical courtship. I've often defined courtship, as opposed to recreational dating, as a system of pairing off where you have six idiots involved instead of two. So, there you go. And what is that? Well, I've seen courtships from hell. I've seen, you know, people doing it wrong. And I've seen people who do the recreational dating thing who are sane, balanced people, and they get together and everything's fine. So there's not a rule. But as a general pattern, one of the things I encourage, and it's ideal if it's dad, for you young ladies, it's ideal if it's dad, you need someone in your life who, remember how I said that the young man who's interested in you doesn't think the way you do at all. And you need a wiser, older guy who cares for you and loves you, who remembers thinking like he's thinking. Okay? And is prepared to chase him out of the house for thinking it. So if, "Oh, Dad, he's just wonderful. He told me this and he told me that, and Dad remembers, I know what's going on." Right, he is. That's a line, right? He's feeding her a line, and then he takes Billy aside and tells him that. Well, that kind of thing. If Dad's checked out and is not involved, then an uncle or an older brother, or you know, just someone that is in your life that can speak into the choices you're making from a masculine perspective that you can trust. That's basically. The active involved authority of the father and mother is basically the heart of courtship. And when you don't have those ingredients, then you make shift with what you've got.
Yeah. One of the other things we have, especially at New St. Andrews, you have a lot of people that are living together, roommates. You do something, everyone kind of knows about it, or at least your roommates know about it. Can you talk about what it looks like to be a good friend? Sometimes you need to not spread rumors, not gossip. Sometimes you need to confront someone who shouldn't be doing what they're doing. Can you give a few principles there for what it looks like to be specifically these same-sex friendships?
Yeah, like watching out for each other.
Yeah.
So whenever you go to confront someone about or admonish them, exhort them, whatever it is, Ambrose Bierce defined exhort as putting the conscience of another upon the spit and roasting it to a nut brown discomfort. So, I mean, biblical exhortation, not that kind of exhortation. But whenever you're going to someone to admonish or correct, you're writing a check. Okay, you're writing a check. And you need to be more you need to know more than that it's your checkbook with your name in the upper left-hand corner. You don't want to be the person who says, how can I be out of money? I still have checks left. It doesn't work like that. If you're going to talk to someone about them being stupid or foolish, you want to have deposits in that account. You want them to know you and trust you and have the kind of relationship where you can write a check for 10 bucks and the check will clear. Right? They will listen to you. But if you've been fighting with somebody over the course of a term about where he leaves his breakfast bowl, and he all of a sudden is interested in a girl, and furthermore, to complicate things, you're interested in the same girl, I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation with a young man who's, should I call her dad? And I had the week before that same conversation with that guy's roommate about the same girl. This happens lots. It happens lots. So if you are at all competitive, or if there's any other envy issues going on, make sure that you check, get the beam out of your own eye before you try to do eye surgery, and then make sure that you really do have your friend's best interest in mind when you when you're talking to them, and don't have your filters on an ultra fine mesh. You remember I said she said hi and smiled and the guy's in the zone? Well, that's not good, but neither is it good for her to smile and say hi and have all that guy's roommates rebuking him because she smiled at you and you better call her dad. I'm telling you as your pastor, you better not.
You mentioned this needy bucket person, and this can be the guy or the girl. So let's say someone's hearing that and recognizing, okay, I think my love levels are low, or my respect levels are low. Right. And how would you counsel that kind of person to be, they're wanting to be married, but are recognizing they have these deficiencies in themselves?
Right. This is going to sound like a Jesus juke answer, but I would really encourage you in that if you realize those deficiencies or insecurities in yourself, to pursue Christ. Give yourself to worship, give yourself to reading of the word, give yourself, you want to be a disciple of Christ, and you want to ask him to be filling in those things that ultimately another human being can't fill in anyway. So if you go into a relationship or into a marriage and you're a needy bucket, and oftentimes needy buckets marry needy buckets, they just have different needs and they're both leaky needy buckets. They are just, it's like two swimmers both drowning and that clutch each other and go down together. So you want to make sure that you begin by asking God to restore you and to fill those things that can be filled by him by as you just simply grow in the word. Now, that's the basic spiritual identity component. There's another component where there are certain things that can only be fulfilled by an earthly partner, right? Companionship, children, sexual relationship, friendship, all of those things. When God gives you that, he is giving you something that's very good. He who finds a wife finds a good thing, it says in Proverbs, but it is a secondary or a tertiary good. The fundamental good has to be, you need to be walking with God. If you're walking with God, basically you can't make a good omelet with rotten eggs. And if there's something wrong with your egg, you want to get that fixed before you go into any relationship.
My last question, I'll turn it over to the audience. You mentioned the guy who needs to know, he needs to be farther along than the woman is before he approaches her. What kind of advice would you give to a guy who's trying to, how do you find out if you know, kind of thing?
So, this is, Augustine once said, love God and do as you please. So, and there's a world, I could probably write an article or a book on this, but this is basically, how do you walk in the will of God generally? Picture this lectern, the surface area of this lectern, as the will of God for all Christians. And off the lectern is not the will of God for any Christian. So you don't have to pray about whether to sell cocaine. You don't have to pray about whether to break your contract. You don't have to pray about whether to become a hitman for the mafia. It's off the table. So on the surface is anything that is permissible or lawful for any Christian. Okay? So sometimes it's not lawful to marry her, as John the Baptist said to Herod. You can't have her. It's off the table. But if it were on the table, let's say you've been praying about, you know, Susie Q and three different girls, or let's say you're a girl and you've been approached by different guys, and you're and all of them seem to be stand-up guys, and okay, what do I do? How do I decide? And because it'd be lawful to marry any of them, okay? So it'd be lawful. So they're on the surface area. They're within the as far as what the Bible says, any of them are okay. But on the lectern, on and off has to do with sin, not sin, or sin and righteousness. Decisions that you make within the revealed will of God can still be wise or unwise. So you want to be making wise decisions that are lawful. Okay, wise decisions that are lawful. And there are three things that if you want to make a wise decision, and this applies to actually anything, job offers, where you go to grad school, how you make decisions about relationships, that applies to everything. There are three things that you need to ask and answer for yourself. And the illustration I use, this is an odd mixed metaphor, is drill three holes in the surface area, stick a dowel in each one of the holes, then walk around on that surface area, and when the three dowels line up, go. God doesn't steer parked cars. You don't just sit there parked asking God to direct you or asking God to drop a woman out of heaven. However many country songs say that that's how it happens. Anyway, did it hurt when you fell? Yeah, right. So when you those three things line up, then you go. And those three things are: what are your abilities? What are your opportunities? And what are your desires? What can you do? What will they let you do? And what do you want to do? Those are the three questions. And love God and do as you please. So Psalm 37:4 says, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. That's love God and do as you please. So you've surrendered the whole thing to God. God, I don't want to get out of your will at all, but I want to be moving so that you can steer where I'm going. And then the initial direction I pick has to do with abilities, opportunities, and desires. So on abilities, guys, since you're the ones initiating, one of the questions I've asked young men frequently is, can your pickup truck pull that trailer? Do you have the horsepower? All right. Remember, I said it's not any woman and any man. There are fine Christian men who would be miserable husbands to certain women because, let's say, the woman's more educated or much more energy, much, you know, quicker, brighter, more intelligent. Right, and he's going to have a hard time leading her. If that's not a good, he can be a good guy and it not be a good match. Right, he can be a good guy and not be a good match. He doesn't have the ability to do that, and that's where you need friends and family to say, I don't think so. Or of course, opportunity. She might fix that problem for you. No. Let me think about it. No. Let me pray about it. No. So what are your opportunities? But if you know, if you say, yeah, I think I could lead her, I think I could love her and lead her, and I think I could do that, and I think that if I pursued her, I think there's a decent chance that she would respond and it would work out. If I took the initiative, I think this could happen. And then, so the third question is, do you want to? Right? What do you want to do? And then, and this is why Christian men need to grow a backbone, take a risk. You cannot sneevel your way into figuring out what she would say if you were to say, you know, if you were to indicate a hypothetical, if I were, you know, we were supposed to, and then go home and try to read the tea leaves and ask all your roommates about how do we interpret this. If you want to know if she's going to go with you to the mission field, then ask. Ask her, yeah. Right?
All right, questions?
Asking for a friend. All of these.
Jane.
Okay, if guys, I would say, don't try. Because when women try to make men be respectable, it's just disrespect. Okay, steer clear of them. If don't feel sorry for them. Poor little buddies. I mean, but seriously, if the biggest danger that Christian women have that get them dragged into sorry relationships is they try to be mom. They try to supply all the encouragement that he should have gotten from his mom and his dad all the way through high school, and he didn't, and her heart goes out to him, and he keeps failing and he keeps stumbling, and you the need is not the call. You can see the need, you can see the problem, you can identify, you could probably explain it all to him if you were in a position to, but it's just going to make a mess if you try, right? If you have a brother, not a brother in Christ, but let's say a brother who's in the same circle and you're talking, you could ask, you know, your brother or uncle or your dad, you could ask someone to say something or encourage him in the ways that he needs. But there is absolutely no way for you to do that without miscommunicating absolutely everything about what you're doing. Run away.
All right, other questions? Sean.
This isn't necessarily about sexual husband-wife relationships with boys and girls in general. Do you have any special advice on what you should give a student that you're teaching? How to approach them, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. You know, how you teaching style, how you should address the males different than the females, what's it like when you address them all together?
So when you address students all together, it should be as, surprise, people, right? You address the humans in your class, but I noticed decades ago that feminine piety, and I'm going to stipulate godly girls and godly guys. I've seen this at Logos, I've seen it at NSA, I've seen it. So masculine piety and feminine piety look very different. They just look different, and you want to encourage both. And in order to encourage both, you have to recognize both. And generally, over the last century and a half, Christian institutions, the church and schools and so forth, have sort of latched onto feminine piety as the ultimate thing that they desire, because feminine piety is institution friendly. Okay, when you have pious, godly girls, they don't want to break the rules. They want to color inside the lines. They want to do what you asked, and they want to be respectful and dutiful and that sort of thing. And of course, the boys should be respectful and dutiful also, but it looks different. So I first noticed this at Logos one time. Decades ago, we had a girls' basketball. The girls' basketball team was dominated by a group of beautiful, intelligent, top scholar, godly girls. They were godly and they looked like it. And they were the kind of people who would write, if somebody was a little down, they would write an encouraging note, leave it in their friend's locker, with bubble letters, you know, the kind of and this, they dot the I's with a little circle. I was thinking of you, that you looked a little down, I was praying for you, how are you doing, you know, that sort of thing. And the teacher sees that, and he's thinking faculty commendation time, this is the sort of thing that we like to see. And then he walks down the hall, and while he's walking past a couple of guys, one of them pops the others in the shoulders and knocks them into the locker and says, "You meathead." And the teacher goes on, and the idea of a faculty commendation never occurs to him, right? even though that was the godliest thing that happened on that campus that day. Because this guy, the guy who popped him, found out that his friend had asked a non-Christian girl out the night before. So he popped him. You meathead. Well, that doesn't look institution friendly. It doesn't feel institution friendly. And so I would just remember what you said earlier: affirmation, security, love expressed generally to the girls, respect, discipline, stand up straight for the guys. And the guys wither under a certain kind of discipline and flourish under another kind. So there are some guys who limp along, you know, fights with their parents, all kinds of problems, and then for years of all kinds of problems, and then they join the Marines. And they go to boot camp, and someone's right here yelling in their face about their ancestry and how much like a maggot they are. And they write these glowing letters from boot camp. Mom, this is just wonderful. There's a certain kind of hard discipline that guys thrive under, and you should be praying that God would show you what these guys need. Respect to the guys, and considerate attention to the girls, remembering that that's an emphasis, not an exclusion.
Other questions? Okay, we expect zero problems the rest of the evening. Please join me in thanking Pastor Deb for coming.